This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Tuesday morning, the 10th of September.
Ooh, oh, yes.
All right, I hope your day's off to a good start. I mean, maybe you haven't even started yet. Maybe my words are the first words you hear. It always used to bother me a little bit that I would be, for some people, the first person they spoke to in the morning. You know?
Bother you, though?
Well, yeah, because it's huge responsibility. Like, if the first person you speak to in the morning puts you in a good mood, great. If they ruin your day, shit, you know? Uh-huh. Like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy who's like, oh, good morning. I hope you're having a terrible time. It's such a shitty day, and oh, there's all this horrible news. And I don't want to be that guy, so.
You don't want to be Sia.
Well,
he was that guy also.
Poor Sia is still reeling from last week's news and the fact that he had to host this show that was depressing because there wasn't any good news. And I'm so glad I wasn't here, Sia, to see you at your. Because you're a pretty optimistic, happy guy.
Mm.
I don't think it suits your personality to be dark.
It's all about perspective as well, but I was struggling to even find perspective.
So a little bit of a change to things this morning. We've got Pumelele in on a Tuesday now, and part of the reason that we're doing this is because we're introducing a new little feature into the day. So we still have the Burning Platform on a Thursday with Canthan. We've got Pumi here on a Tuesday now, with her permission, of course.
Continuous consent.
Right,
yes.
And we have to keep on reinventing. And yeah, continuous consent's massively important to me.
Do you want to talk about the new feature?
Well, yes, it's called, we're going to be doing this thing called How's It China?
Well,
for a couple of weeks, don't be cheesy, Sia.
Have you been practicing this? This is what he said to me when I walked in this morning.
He's like, been waiting.
Oh, my trip to China, that's all I remember. Ni hao, ni hao ma, and shishin.
Have you been to China?
No, unfortunately.
So actually, out of all of us, the only one who has been in the studio is Sia.
Ni hao ma.
Okay. So, all right.
Whatever, Sia.
Yeah. The minute he goes somewhere, he immediately thinks he's taken on the personality of everyone in that country, which is just amazing. I mean, Sia's like a...
That's so...
It's like a population diffuser. But we're doing this new thing called How's It China, where we're going to tell you a little bit about the country, because this is one of the most misunderstood, one of the most mysterious places on earth. It's a huge country. I mean, it's in terms of landmass, it's I think the fourth or fifth biggest country in the world, right?
Yeah.
It's got an enormous population. It has incredible internal dynamics. It is becoming one of the most powerful centers of world influence. Certainly, it is producing and manufacturing many of the goods that we use on a daily basis. And we don't know much about China. And I was in conversation with Pumi and a few other people, and we decided, you know what we need to do is create a few episodes, and we'll create this series effectively, and we'll do it on the show, where we can introduce you to China. Today we'll talk about it from a tourism point of view, because there's plenty of reasons to go to China. It might not be on your radar, but after today it probably will be. And we'll talk you through it and guide you and hold your hand, and hopefully we'll learn stuff together.
Figure it out.
Right. So Pumi was telling me, we'll get to How's It China later. Pumi was telling me about this, this podcast that she's been listening to. Holy hell.
Wow.
Listen to this. Please tell us about it.
So we all know America is a crazy place, right?
Of course.
But the level of, like, am I allowed to say fucked upness?
Mm-hmm.
With a capital F.
So this girl,
yeah,
who's the main character, has been for years having these nightmares, can't quite understand, is it a nightmare, is it a regret, is it like a repressed memory, whatever. And 2 years ago, the penny all dropped and everything fell into place.
So she was traumatized. There was clearly something that had gone wrong. And what did she figure it out with the psychologist, or did she just lie there in bed one night and have an epiphany?
Part of it was with the psychologist.
Okay.
But part of it was also just kind of lying in bed and just something clicking for her.
Wow.
sure.
Okay, so she had these nightmares.
And the whole podcast starts with her actually saying, you know, how many times
the actual
have you heard
girl?
Of, yeah, the actual woman. She's wow. She's the co-host of the thing. How many times have you ever been in a place where someone was actually murdered?
Oh, sure. What a question.
And like close to you. And she's like, when I was a kid, this happened to me a lot. Everywhere we've ever lived, so they moved around a lot. She's one of five kids or whatever. They moved around a lot. And turns out her father was a serial killer.
And it's called what?
The Clearing.
Oh my God. So everywhere they went, people died. And as a child, this obviously...
And the dad talked about it.
He talked
She's like, yeah, my dad talked about like people dying a lot. You know,
sick
people... Dude, and then this whole thing, it's like 8 episodes, I think, is like going back and kind of figuring out. And turns out her dad is actually one of the more famous, like, serial killers in America.
Is he still alive?
No, he's dead. Because he got caught for one thing.
Uh-huh.
And she was actually part of how he got caught. Because she gave him up.
What?
And then they went into the cold cases. The thing is insane. Every time I listen to these podcasts, I'm just like, America, yo. Like, Lord. People die. Like, some of these murders happened when the dad was in his 30s. And when he was caught, it was like 35 years later or whatever.
Mm.
So, like, for 30 years, I'm just like, what?
That's unbelievable.
They never figured it out. He moved from place to place. I'm just like...
He must have been a pro.
That's really unbelievable.
And this guy.
My God.
And they have tapes.
Harrowing.
He taped a lot of his like conversations. He also did quite a lot of like documentary. You know how even when you watch on Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. Every time they have a serial killer, I'm just like, serial killers, y'all. They've got lots of video.
They love filming
footage.
Themselves. This is why I'm telling you now, you've got to be very careful of anyone who makes a video of themselves every day and puts it on YouTube or whatever.
There's something to be said about that. What? They want to document the process. I don't know what it is because I'm not that smart.
This is a well-known thing about serial killers is they want...
They want people to find
They want
out.
Attention. They're doing it for... They're certainly not doing it just because they like to kill. They're doing it because they like to kill and because they want you to eventually find out. They want to be caught and they want you to find out that they were a mastermind serial killer because it gives them massive thrill. It's their fetish.
One of the police who was kind of investigating one of the cold cases, he actually became friends with this policeman.
Uh-oh.
Used to write to him. They interview the policeman on the...
Wow.
Guys.
That America,
y'all, be afraid.
No, this can happen everywhere, though.
No, the reason we find out about it more in America is because they've got a media machine and because people all have smartphones and because people are connected to the internet.
But they're also obsessed with crime. Like,
true crime That's true.
Is one of America's biggest genres in podcasting and TV. I mean... Mm-hmm. They're obsessed with it. America.
But put yourself in the shoes of this
girl.
You find out that the same man who rubbed your tummy, put, warmed milk up for you, drove you to school every day, helped you with your maths, is also the same person who's been going out and murdering people.
One of the people,
cold blood.
Oh,
one of
no.
the people he actually murdered was a young man that he took in as a foster kid, and then took him in, became his little personal project. And she talks about how they were all older by that time, and they'd all moved away and whatever. How they all were so uncomfortable with the relationship the dad had with this boy, and then the boy died.
Oh, so suspiciously.
And then they were just like, And
how
she
did this
talks
guy
about
kill?
How
did he kill these people? Different ways?
Yeah, shot.
Oh my God.
And I think 3 times he shot like young couples. Like a young couple on Lover's Lane or whatever.
Oh.
That also says something as well. Yo, this guy had issues.
Dude.
A nasty person.
But this is what I love about podcasts. This is what I love about this medium is when you're in the car, you don't have to listen to like the news. You can choose to listen to depressing, scary shit.
Right.
Oh, that's tough to have to rat on your own parents as well. Just be like, hey, look, I need to call the cops on my dad. He's screwed up. Yeah, need to be the one who takes him behind bars.
Dude, the one thing that as I listen to this podcast is I think we need more people like this girl. We need more people who are willing to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Over. And I think this for me, like last week.
Like they won't do something for the team. They'll do what's right for all people and for themselves. And like they'll rat out even if the person is their father.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we, again, to refer to all the bad news from last week, because Sia updated me on what had been going on. I really stayed out of the news, and that's why I was so happy when I got back.
And now how are you feeling?
There's violence against women and the xenophobic violence that we're seeing. And by the way, some of those videos that are being horrible, horrible videos that I won't even watch that have been sent around, some of them are not related to what's going on. I mean, surprise, surprise, same as the Amazon story with all those fires, wasn't actually in the Amazon at this time. Yeah, there's a lot of fake stuff that gets sent out.
Fake news.
I'm surprised people
aren't
just...
say it like Donald Trump?
Fake news. I'm wondering why people don't just cut parts of Game of Thrones if they want brutality in their life and send this around and go, did you see what happened in the CBD today? And then they show like the mountain from Game of Thrones because people would probably believe it. But to go back to Pumi's point, this violence against women thing, and you know, the first thing you got to do if you want to stop this, it's not protesting and activism and all men are trash and suddenly every man in the world has to chemically castrate themselves and all this other nonsense. What you got to do is in your own family and in your own circle of friends and in the places you can have influence, you can actually make a change. Start making a change. If you find out that there's a guy who's doing this stuff, don't go to the authorities. Go to that person if you're a man and take them on about it. And if you're brave enough, I mean, this is what brave men have done throughout the centuries, right? You go up to shitty men and you tell them you're out of the tribe. You are not allowed to carry on behaving like this. And if you behave like this, you can't be part of our civilized society. Ooh. And we got to do that.
Is that not asking for a lot?
You know what? It is
asking for a lot.
Is it asking for a lot? Let the women keep on being abused? No.
Is it asking for
a lot? It's the least a man can do.
Go to authorities. Now you're getting involved. I'm not beating my chest and...
I'm talking about in your own sphere of influence.
If it's someone you know, Sia.
If it's a friend of yours,
you know,
a family member of yours.
Don't keep quiet.
Call them out.
You have a little imbizo. You get all the men in your community together who you know are good people, and you bring that motherfucker in. You sit him down in the middle and you say, right,
you puss.
Today's judgment day. No, hold on. You sit him down, you say, today's judgment day. And you say, we're going to sort this out now. We're going to deal with this like civilized adults. And if you don't like the way that this is about to go, then you can leave immediately. You can go somewhere into the hinterland and we'll never see you again. We're going to warn the people you go and visit what kind of a creature you are. Mm. But now, here's how it's going to change. You know, everybody's looking to government and to the police and to politicians to solve their problems. I'm going to remind you what Pumi said a while ago on the Burning Platform. The problems have to be solved by us. Forget about it. Government is... we don't even have a government. Like, this country doesn't have a government. You can pretty much do whatever you want. It's the Wild West. You want proof of this? We had the Statistician General tell us 2 years ago. This is old news now. If you don't know it already, spread this news around. The 97%, all but 3%, or sorry, 93%, all but 7% of our municipalities are completely defunct and bankrupt. Mm-hmm. That means, as far as 93% of the municipalities in this country go, they're already lawless, non-government-run, authority-less places. So you go to the police or the mayor or the councillor in a place like, I don't know, some far-flung rural part of South Africa, or maybe not even so rural, sometimes in the East Rand or in, you know, Northern Durban. You don't know. And there's just no authority there. So if you're a woman and you've been in a situation of peril, well, who do you go to? You can't go to the authorities. So it's up to us in our families, in our communities, to take control of this situation. And it's going to mean that some people are going to get hurt. But you know what? The people who are going to get hurt are going to be the ones who step into the breach and behave like real men. and say, I'm not going to allow the women in this community or this family to keep on being abused and tortured like this by a bunch of sickos. Am I wrong?
Don't keep quiet, Sia.
No, I'm not saying keep quiet at all, and I do understand the value of standing out, but it's tough and it's tricky. I'm.
Let me tell you something. If someone did something to your sister,
yeah,
it wouldn't be that difficult for you to make this decision. I'm telling you now. You're not a violent person. I'm not a violent person. I try to avoid conflict wherever I can, because certainly physical conflict, I'm not always sure I can win.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't go into a fight knowing I can win, then you're stupid, because you're going to emerge very, very upset and painful afterwards.
You just go in their way.
There are ways to do it. And see, if someone did hurt your sister, you'd know what to do.
Yeah. Maybe it's because I've never been in a situation like that, but I'm not one to just get knee deep and, yeah, let's just sort it out. No, I think there are procedures or go to authorities.
You'd have to walk up to someone and punch them in the head. What I'm saying is you can call a little meeting.
I think that was the
part. And remember, there's strength in numbers. There are bound to be more good people in any given family than there are bad.
And you see, the thing for me about not keeping quiet is also about warning other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about saying to an individual, you're not going to get away with this. We're not going to allow this kind of behavior. But it's also important to warn other people.
Yes,
like,
because
people must know what kind of a person they are. You know
that.
You know that shame. Shame.
Yeah. Name and shame bell. I've got it right here. Here's the shame bell. Shame. Shame. Shame.
Do you want to do a daily shame report? The way the world is headed.
Let's go into some other stuff. Because this is quite heavy. This is from Niska. Niska says, you are literally the first person I hear in the morning, together with my first cup of coffee and some banana bread. What a great way to start the day.
Some banana bread.
Not great?
That's a great idea.
My whole household is still asleep while I'm trying to be a productive member of society. Sometimes I wonder if they're the smart ones. No. There's something to be said for waking up early. I know if you listen to us live and you're listening now, you're probably feeling sorry for yourself, because you're like, oh, some people wake up at 7 and 8.
Sneeze on the truth.
But the fact is that you get a head start. You get to do things that they can't do. I love to clear out that email inbox before 9 o'clock.
Yes.
Then everybody else comes in. They're busy frantically catching up, starting their day, and you're calm and cool as a cucumber, and you can start applying yourself to your little list of priorities.
That window for us, straight after the show and until the rest of the world is like in the office and operate.
One of my favorite parts of the
best
day.
Best times.
It is, huh?
Because you're finally over. Oh, it's so early. That moaning. Yeah. And now you actually feel like, okay, yeah.
How many doing years things. Has it been? Oh, so early.
Every. I'll never forget one of the first conversations I had with the team back in 2014. I was asking, do you ever get used to this? And even before I've completed the sentence, they all jumped in, was like, no, no.
So this is interesting. A couple of people are asking. Tabo says, Pumi's voice and presence is confusing me. Is it Thursday already?
Did yes, I sleep? It is.
Did I sleep Monday night and wake up Thursday morning? No.
Yeah, boy.
Tabo, calm down. I just thought we'd let you know.
Too excited.
Apparently, let's just talk a little bit about Julius Malema for a second, because there's a lot going on right now. I've got a video here that's been published by the Daily Maverick.
Daily Maverick. It's Polly van Wyk.
Just listen to this quickly. She is, by the way, in terms of fearless journalists, hey, this Bobby. Woman.
Y'all ain't ready for this.
Listen to this quickly. This is interesting. So the Daily Maverick's put a video together about Julius'
spending. In December 2017, around the 9th, the EFF held their central command team meeting in the Johannesburg region. Mm-hmm. Scorpio's data shows that, on this evening, the Mahuna Investments bank card follows Malema to Sandton City restaurant, Wine on the Square, where he spends 8,400 rand in stolen VBS money.
Wow.
By this time, Schameka Project has paid 4.3 million in money robbed from VBS into Mahuna Investments. 3 days later, Malema speaks to the EFF SRC meeting at a hotel in Johannesburg. On the same day, the Mahuna Investments bank card paid for a Sandton City shopping spree at Checkers Hyper for close to 300 rand, Gucci 9,900 rand, Louis Vuitton for 11,100 rand, and Total Sports just over 1,000 rand.
I like the way he also goes to Checkers. At least he's still at humble. Least he's trying to be humble.
For 300 rand.
Yeah, well, because they don't have like Red Bull at the Gucci.
They only show champagne.
When Malema left for Sashego and Polokwane to celebrate Christmas and New Year in his hometown, the Mahuna Investments bank card follows. Mm-hmm. On the eve of the festive season, Malema spent 13,529 rand in VBS money on Pick and Pay, Truworths, Edgars, and Spitz in Polokwane.
Halala Spitz.
In the first half of 2018, the Mahuna bank card records almost no point of sale transactions, but for a 1,887 rand payment at H&M in Sandton City. This sale is recorded about 5 months after EFF members attacked H&M mannequins on the back of their leaders.
Yes, Boli.
The hypocrisy is deep, man.
Yes, Boli.
July 2018 is the same month panicked VBS depositors attempted to extract their money from the bank's Toyando branch. Malema spent a total of 900,000 rand in VBS money this month, utilizing internet and point-of-sale transactions. On 3 July, Malema spent 20,400 rand at the Gucci store in Sandton City using the...
He likes him some Gucci, hey? Mm-hmm. That was his repeat business. Went to Gucci.
Bank card linked to the Mahuna Investments account. Days later, on 6 July, a payment of 10,860 rand is made at Durban events venue, The Warehouse.
I like this. This is interesting to see.
Oh, that is real money.
Payments are recorded on 7 and 8 July in Belito at the Hampshire Hotel for 11,560 rand, as well as the Lifestyle Tops in Belito for 2,090 rand. On the 9th, the card was used again at the Montrose Garage, close to Harrismith in the Free State, for what seems to be a 1,000 rand fuel purchase. Harrismith is located on the route between Durban and Johannesburg.
Yeah, you're driving home.
Right.
During the same month, Malema travelled to Northwest to take part in the land debate in Freiburg, Mabato and Rustenburg.
All right. Now we're really getting
into
this.
Mahuna Investments bank card followed him again. On 17 July, Malema pays what seems to be accommodation for 2,920 rand in Christiana.
That's a bargain in Christiana.
And right? Later that day, he buys food for 149 rand at Nando's in Freiburg.
Okay.
The next day, he makes a 831 rand purchase at a pharmacy in Mabato.
All right. He bought some, I don't know, pain medication.
Hangovers, baby.
Yeah. Mm.
The next transaction recorded on the card is when he paid 2,053 rand for accommodation in Rustenburg at the Royal Marang Hotel.
All right. Again, bargain in Rustenburg.
The Mahuna Investments bank card followed Malema to Cape Town too. At the height of the land debate on 22 August 2018, the EFF's Twitter account posted a video of Malema in Parliament discussing the amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution. The Mahuna Investments bank card suggests he arrived the previous day, made a payment to the City Lodge at the V&A waterfront for 1,861 rand.
Well, he's not staying at the Cape Grace. I mean, you know.
As well as at the Capital Mirage Hotel for 2,095 rand and left Cape Town the next day after the parliamentary session. The airport Wimpy received 350 rand and 1,000 rand was withdrawn from an airport ATM.
Not at the lounge, okay.
In September, Malema is in Polokwane.
All right, and the she Mahuna goes on. I mean, I'm not going to go into the whole thing because she really does break it down. But the fact is, if someone followed you and you were, you know, they tracked your spending, would any of the stuff that you've spent your money on be embarrassing? Because, I mean, I give it all to my accountant, so they already know what's going on with me. I don't know that. If it's, he spent 900,000 rand in 1 month. In 1 month with that VBS card. Well, with that card that he had that was...
It's following him everywhere.
You know, that card had money that came straight out of VBS. And I wonder what the effect of this is going to be, because someone said to me now, breaking news, apparently he had he'd been attacked by the EFF with bottles. His bodyguard fired live rounds at the angry mob. And this is from KC. Is this true?
Oh, so that was the story about his discharging of a firearm. Oh,
but that was ages ago, right? That was a long time ago. That was, what, a couple of months ago?
Y'all, I just want to know, right?
Yeah.
Gucci.
Mm.
What is it that you're buying at Gucci 2 days in succession? Like, what happened? Like, on your way home, you realize, oh, I forgot to get that belt.
No, for me.
Like, what?
It's different girls. Don't you realize this? Mm. Do you not realize this?
T.
All right, well.
Mara, at least German. The guy is German. Spits every now and again.
But the how Cavella, do you feel baby, about Cavella. Yourself, man? How do you feel about yourself? I'm not trying to be high and mighty.
You don't feel anything.
But
if you're
are swiping away. And
there are people who couldn't withdraw their pensions, remember?
These are people who worked hard and they're trying to make their money work for them. And here you go.
Yeah, it's just interesting. And I've got to say, like, Polly van Wyk, the EFF are after her in a big way right now.
So read the article because they put it out yesterday and it's thorough, hey?
Really?
It's thorough. It's a magnificent piece of journalism, the kind of investigative journalism that they've done on that thing. So that video is only like a summary of some of the stuff.
Yeah,
but
he ends up spending close to 4 million rand over the last year and a half.
So this is the thing I've always wondered.
Spending 4.5 million.
How do these guys come out on the other side broke?
Exactly. Well,
how. I've always wondered, like, what are you doing with, how does one person spend all this money?
Easy money.
Gucci gang, baby. Yeah.
I'm trying to see what the biggest purchase was in this
Gucci.
4 million. What's this Makete Lodge for 1.7?
Oh, dude.
1.7 million.
This is the place in Limpopo where everybody hangs out.
Oh,
it's like a...
Should we say, oh, at least they bought property? They were
drinking
no,
place.
You didn't buy
no,
property.
They didn't buy property. Somebody else owns the lodge. It's
that
like
was the booze
a
and
party.
The food.
Yeah.
Wait.
1.7 million rand
on
booze,
and food.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's like Disofeng. You come from Soweto, you know this. It's like Disofeng. It's the Limpopo version.
Over the course of a year.
No, this was one event. This was one thing.
At one event, they spent 1.7, rounded up 1.8, because it's 1,790,000.
Like Pumi was saying just now, if you go to the bottle store and you spend 2,000 rand, that might just be two bottles of something.
Hmm.
If you're buying really expensive liquor. Now, if you're buying...
Or maybe four bottles of Bonang champagne.
Well, if you know...
Don't be that person.
If you know
I'm
how
just
much...
saying...
If you know how much...
I can see they don't spend their money on white Monopoly Capital owned what?
They do. We know that for a fact. The ANC's last big Makiti, they bought Rupert and Rothschild wine.
The Bonnie EFF, they had Rupert and Rothschild
at their
wine.
Tables there.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so there's an interesting new development, but of course it won't change a damn thing for people who support Julius. Just like if you find out that Donald Trump's been banging a porn star, his followers don't suddenly stop following him.
Hey.
Don't get your hopes up. Why is Polly saying this is VBS money? Says this is one of our questions this morning. This comes from Nkahlo Leng, who says, why am I only getting addicted to you guys now? Wasted my ear 3 hours a day for the last 6 years. Well, welcome. Welcome, dude. Why is Polly saying this is VBS money? Why is she linking it to that? Well, it is. The money in the account that Julius was using the card for came straight from VBS. So it is undoubtedly stolen money. Now, Julius is in a tough situation. If he says
stolen from the poor.
If he says he didn't steal this money, then he should really sue Polly for contempt, for defamation, right? And he should take it to court, and then he can win, and then he could prove I didn't steal this money. But if he doesn't, then he has stolen the money, then charges will be pressed. And remember, you can't be an MP if you have a criminal record.
And
that's
we
at
know
least
how
the rule.
Litigious. We know how litigious they are. They don't always win.
Yeah. No, but they always go to court. So if they haven't gone to court, they're already admitting something, is what the basis of this is.
Slush fund.
I'm so sucked into this and I don't want to be.
But the most important thing about this is, I mean, go and look at more of it because it's interesting. The most important thing is that there's just such hypocrisy going on. I mean,
more than half a million at the Durban July.
Yeah. And remember, as Pumi says, this is poor people's money.
Whoa, speaking of the Durban July.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the Durban July. Do you remember last year at the Durban July, there was that guy, Sam What? He was trending.
The Sam Holdings guy.
Yeah, he was trending. He was like taking a convoy of What? How many 72 cars down to?
Exotic cars.
How many cars?
72.
He took 72 exotic. Luxury yeah. cars down to the Durban July.
That's what he did.
Yep. And you think, no one's going to notice.
Well, they've nabbed him now.
What?
Hey,
breaking
he's in
news.
Cuffs.
Breaking
he's in cuffs,
news.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
Well, what? I saw they're also going after Thibaut Touch for the money that
really?
That he got out of the IDC.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's the story there?
You can pull your jaw off the ground now.
This is just the this is breaking news from 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, the IDC, Industrial Development Corporation, they gave him a whole bunch of money last year. And he hasn't shown what he spent it on, but it's all gone. So, again, we've got this conspicuous consumption problem. So, I'm just watching this quietly. As Pumi says, sipping your tea.
Hey, and you know, Papa, I'd like to take this moment to say I appreciate our cup of brown. I appreciate that Austrian chooses whether she wants to clean or not. I just appreciate our humble abode because we just keep to ourselves and mind our own business.
Yeah, I've seen some spending in my time.
Yeah.
That's no way to grow a business. That's no way to start your... Let me... Wherever you see people spending a lot of money, unless they have legitimately millions and millions and they've put it into fixed assets of some kind and this is surplus... Anyone who's spending on stuff like Gucci and Louis
75
Vuitton,
car convoys.
That just, I'm telling you, those people are going to either end up in jail or they're going to be back in the poverty that they came from.
But 75 cars, you know, when I saw that, I was just like, so you see a trending, you know, the trend list come up. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, what is this trending? People are talking about the Sam Holdings, what? I'm like, go into this thing. I'm like, who's this guy?
Yeah, but it's
what is
legit.
His name? What is his name, by the way?
Sam Mshengu. That's his name. And
did he just become popular from this?
No. From the 75
car. Yeah, from this.
Car.
But like, he buys a luxury car like every other month. Then goes and spins it and does donuts in an S65 AMG. Who does that?
Speaking
well,
our
let's,
language.
Let's
what is
start
it?
With...
It's a super luxury Mercedes.
Let's just start with that in the five things because we're running late in this one. So five things you need to know this morning. First one is the Mpumalanga-based logistics operator became a household name earlier this year during the Durban July when he arrived in a convoy of 72 luxury cars.
72, Kuku, get the number right.
Right, I was off by three. Forgive me.
News broke on Sunday evening that he had been arrested by elite police investigative unit, the Hawks, in the Mpumalanga town of Emalahleni. After journalist Sabelo Skiti confirmed the news, the citizen called the Hawks spokesperson Brigadier Hangwani Mulautsi, who said that they would only release an official statement about the arrest on Monday. They have since done that. So there's something interesting. Sam Mshengu. Most South Africans had never heard of him, until he became the face of a flashy convoy of supercars that traveled to the Durban July this year. Dummy.
I mean, if you're going to steal money, please be smart about it. Best believe, party people, if I ever stole money, I am getting a facelift. You will not be able to recognize me. Not even a facelift. I'm getting new retinas. So that when facial recognition and scanners become a thing, you won't even be able to identify me. I'm getting new fingerprints. Be smart.
Well, apparently of the 72 cars in that convoy, 10 belonged to him. He claims he was born in Venda. He opened up in July about his difficult upbringing, which he said was mostly due to the passing of his soldier father who was shot dead in the DRC when he was only 2 days old.
There's the pity party.
Yeah, sure. Everyone has to have a sad story. You know, this is how...
I was hungry.
Yeah, life was hard. So he says he struggled to a point of lacking food, resulted in him dropping out of school at the age of 11. He started working in an orange farm in Limpopo at the age of 11 as a general worker. He worked hard, earned his boss's trust. He was then moved to the trucking division. He learned everything there was to know about trucks and logistics. And then he says He later started his own business, registered his company, Sam Holdings Trading. In 2014, used one of his boss's trucks to start his business. I got a contract when I didn't have a truck at the time. I took my boss's trucks and registered them. I was on commission of 10 rand at a time. This is more of the pity party. Don't believe a word. He kept working, saving money until he got to 3 million rand. He used the money to buy those trucks and trailers in cash.
So when it started trending and I was like, Sam Holdings Trading, Sam, you know, I thought he was a Forex trader.
Yeah.
I was like, most this thing can be legit. Forex trader, this guy.
Anyway.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
Ha-la-la.
Apparently, the first witness in the Dross rape trial has told the court how she found the accused inside a female toilet cubicle. He's pleaded guilty to raping a 7-year-old girl in the bathroom at Dross restaurant in Pretoria in September last year, this animal. Despite the guilty plea, the state is going ahead with the case. With disagreement over his plea argument, the witness is a waitress at the restaurant. She said she was in the bathroom when the mother of the girl, came to look for her. She said the mother screamed several times, calling the victim's name. There was no answer. The witness, who cannot be named, said a few minutes later the shop's childminder came with the mother and forced open the door of the cubicle that was closed.
Mm.
That is when the door opened.
Yo, this waitress was just giving all of the details, according to her. Let's still say that flat out, because she says that Nicholas came into the restaurant alone, but said, oh no, I'm just waiting for someone. Can I have a table for two? But the entire evening, he sat alone. He ordered tons of booze, and I think like he ordered a beer and then ordered some shots, and then later said, oh, actually, I'd like to move tables. Now, in hindsight, we understand that he was moving tables to get closer to the children's play area.
Oh my God.
Which sends an extra chill down your spine. And that's when he slipped away and into the loo. So it's a little... Yucky. Yeah.
I'm ready for the next story.
Yeah, me too. MTN have been slapped with a 5 million rand fine by the ICASA people for failing to notify authorities in time before hiking the price of 1 gigabyte monthly WhatsApp bundles.
Hey.
Well.
Punish them.
The network appeared before ICASA's Complaints and Compliance Committee for increasing the price of the bundle to 30 rand. ICASA's Paseka Malega said, 2 million rand of which is suspended for 3 years so that the licensee doesn't repeat the same offense. But the remaining 3 million should be paid into the ICASA account within a period of 90 days. Now, I want to know what happens to that money.
That's what I thought.
Because it's fine for them to fine MTN, but that's other people's money that MTN are paying over that were actually... They were abused, basically.
They should send all the people who have MTN data bundles, they should send them a voucher.
Exactly.
Extra voucher.
I mean, what is... We don't want ICASA to have 5
what
million
rand. What is ICASA going to do with the 5 million rand?
Appropriate it inappropriately. That's what I'm thinking.
They will send people vouchers. ICASA.
Yeah. So vouchers. I don't like this story. As much as I don't like the cell phone networks for doing this to us, I think it's wrong that ICASA get this money. Mm. Someone's got to ask that question, and I can't believe it wasn't asked in the article. So, and do your research. I think this is EWN that told us that story. Apparently, the Nigerian ambassador, Kabiru.
So nice you say it twice.
That's right.
I like that name.
Said that Nigerians involved in crime in South Africa should face the wrath of the law, but this shouldn't take away from what free movement and integration could do for the continent. He said the High Commission was aware of the allegations leveled against Nigerians amid the ongoing xenophobic attacks in the country, but there are a few of our nationals who are not giving us a good image, and if they are found to commit the crime, the law should take its course, he said. So there's another story with regard to an ongoing issue in Johannesburg. And by the way, Johannesburg, this is an embarrassing story. The city of Johannesburg has cut off the water supply to the Sandton Gautrain station after the landlord racked up a bill of 8 million rand with the municipality. According to the city, the owner...
Over 6 years.
That's right. The owner, Cedar Park Properties, didn't pay for municipal rates since 2013.
This is awkward.
This is my
favorite part of the story.
When journalists approached the Gautrain management for comment, they insisted their water account was up to date. The city of Joburg's finance MMC, Funzelang Gobeni, said that the municipality was in contact with them to find a lasting solution. We are now engaging with them to establish what the issue is and to see if we can make an arrangement. This is part of our credit control management. We were left with no choice but to take the step and cut off their water and power.
Do you know what that story is not saying?
Tell us.
It's not saying Santon residents don't pay there.
Oh, come on, Pony.
Are you
this
taking
is one
it there?
Company. How can you? Come on.
Are you taking it
I do
there?
I do have a story on the historical debt of Soweto mm-hmm. to tell
hear.
You about.
Let me hear.
So there is a little community in Mabetla mm-hmm. who've been without electricity now for, I think, 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And something blew. And the city of Joburg is not coming to fix the situation because
right.
some of the residents haven't been paying their bill.
Uh-huh.
So do you know what they're doing now?
What?
Crowdfunding.
Oh, wow.
Crowdfunding.
Yeah. To pay the bill.
Yeah, to pay their bill. See? Yeah.
Can be done.
Because some people are, and those people are now, they're the ones that have started this campaign to crowdfund for those individuals that are... Because they're all in the boat. You see what happens when you don't keep quiet.
But you
people
see what,
must report these things.
Yeah, this is the point. And look at how communities can do things, positive and negative. All right, interesting stuff. There's a lot to talk about this morning. It is 14 minutes to 7. Those are the 5 things you need to know today. Well,
yeah. There was a lot going on this morning.
Hey.
Yeah. Plenty.
We're not even halfway.
No, we've just scraped Neta Beachy off.
No, it's kind of ridiculous how much there is. All right, so I just got back from Europe, and I said I wouldn't talk about everything all at once because mm-hmm. there's so much to talk about. But I did go to the Vatican, Pumi. And that
did you get
place,
some holy water?
Well, no, I did. One of my mom's friends is a devout Catholic, and I bought her a rosary. But otherwise,
oh.
yeah, because it means way more to her. But I've got to tell you, that place, and you see people from all over the world coming to tour the Vatican. It must be one of the most visited places in the world, by far. Those people are, whether they're Catholic or Christian or not, they're coming there on a privilege, a pilgrimage. And a
well, they are privileged to make it all the way
there.
Because
right?
that place is jam-packed with tourists, but they're on a pilgrimage. Uh-huh. And they're on a pilgrimage whether they're religious or not because they're there to see this incredible art. They're there to see the entire inheritance of ancient Rome, ancient Greece, you know, medieval Europe, the Renaissance. There are some rooms in there. You look around that room in the Raphael rooms where the popes used to live, and you know that those frescoes they've painted, like the School of Athens, my God. You look at those paintings. These are some of the most valuable artifacts on earth. If you consider that in some of these galleries in the Vatican, if you do a 360-degree turn in that room, you're looking at possibly $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion dollars worth of art. Just turn around.
In one room.
Okay, Gareth.
Because that is what people think the most valuable art in the world looks like.
But
that is what people are prepared to pay if those things were on the free market.
Mm. But more than that.
If they were up for sale.
More than the amount that people are willing to pay for it. If you do that 360-degree turn and actually pay attention to the art.
Oh.
It is magnificently breathtaking. You can see the detail of the brush strokes, the oil on the canvas, so well preserved. You see an understanding that when those artists were creating that artwork, what they didn't have is they did not have the benefit of any kind of digital additions. They didn't even have proper light bulbs. They were doing this by candlelight.
And when you think about when you think about Michelangelo lying on his back in his 60s,
suspended.
Yeah. in his 60s.
Suspended on, because he painted. So when you look at, did you go to, yeah, to Sistine. The Sistine Chapel, yeah, right? When he built a contraption to suspend himself, because what was he going to do? He wasn't going to paint it on the floor facing down at it and then hoist it up. He painted that ceiling onto the ceiling. He built a contraption to suspend himself.
My goodness.
And painted each and every single one of those, every single brushstroke he painted, suspended upside down. And when you look at it from the ground up, the perspective.
Yeah, the perspective and the proportions are perfect.
It's how big is this thing? It's the entire ceiling.
Wow. The Sistine Chapel is this building up to the wall over there times two.
What? Yeah.
And he was able to proportionately paint this entire thing.
So what we see of that artwork, right, is photographs or whatever. And so when you're seeing it in front of your face and you're standing up or it's in a book. You don't quite take in the breadth of what it is and just the sheer artistic brilliance of a person painting upside down.
Yeah. And appreciating that the people who are going to be looking at this are not going to be as close as him, so he has to get those proportions exactly right. It is just...
So when you see the hand of God like extended to David, it's Adam. It is.
You're not a very good Catholic if you confuse David and Adam, but it's okay. We'll
forgive you, Father, as you have sinned.
Let me tell you, Pumi's right.
It's insane.
It is breathtaking because in that, you just the Sistine Chapel, right? Forget about the rest of it because that I could talk about for days. But just the Sistine Chapel. So they've got Botticelli panels. They've got Michelangelo panels, including The Last Judgment, which is enormous. There's Perugino, there's Pinturicchio, there's Rosselli. It's just absolutely unbelievable that the Pope said, I want this room to tell the story of Moses on this side. Choose some events from his life. I want to tell the story of Jesus on this side and make sure that all the people are of the same scale so that someone who looks at the Moses picture can compare the size of a body with someone on the Jesus picture on that side, and they'll know that they're the same size of people.
My goodness.
And they all got about their business and painted this magnificent building. It's just
only with sunlight. Like,
exactly.
No, like, close-up spotlight. No, like, charcoal line drawings first. Painted. It's actually, like, unbelievable when you see the marble sculptures and just the way that he was able to capture the way muscle looks.
Michelangelo didn't like painting. It was not his favorite thing to do. He was asked to do it and he was paid a reasonable fee.
He did it for the money.
Well, yeah, because he wanted to sculpt.
He did it for the money.
He was a sculptor.
Sculpture was his thing and he was told by the Pope, Pope says, I needed this a painting. So he says, okay, I want to do this a sculpture. Pope says, you only get to do the sculpture after you do the painting. So he says, all right, Your Holiness, and gets on with it. At 24 years old, he sculpted something called the Pietà.
Come on.
Which is this magnificent, as Pumi says, it almost looks alive. The sculpture of in Carrara marble of Mary holding Jesus in her arms after he's taken off the cross. It's beautiful. And he did that at 24 years old.
Like the cloth looks like cloth.
Right.
What's it called? Sorry, guys.
The Pietà, Pieta.
It's just, yeah, the Vatican.
And then you see the stuff that he used to, for the image of Jesus on the Last Judgment, he used a prototype of an ancient sculpture called the Apollo Belvedere, which is also in the Vatican Museums. It's a very famous statue that purportedly, according to artists and people who've studied this stuff for years and the ancient the ancient masters who drew and sculpted and formed this out of a lump of stone, that this is the most perfectly proportioned of all humans that has ever lived, and it's meant to be the god Apollo. And Michelangelo took that as a model for how he represented Jesus in the Last Judgment. It's just unbelievable.
Then the Pantheon?
I didn't get to go to the Pantheon. No, I only had a day and a half in Rome, so I had to really squeeze everything in. But just to stick to the Vatican, because I'll do the rest of the trip over the next few days. But there's a gallery. It's almost a kilometer long. It's this long corridor. Imagine almost a kilometer of corridor. Marble floors and beautifully painted ceilings. But on the sides of this particular corridor are painted, I can't remember how many, but it's just a lot of maps of Italy. And each of them is painted by a master, a master painter. And it's some region of Italy where each city has all of its little buildings painted in. And they've got the forests, and they've got the rivers, and they've got the names of all the places in calligraphy. Hmm. Straight onto the wall. And the size of these maps is probably about 4 by 3 meters in size.
Yeah. They're huge.
Mm. Unreal. And the only person who ever walked up and down that corridor for a long time was the Pope. So this is how he surveyed Italy. He would walk up and down this corridor, and he would look at these maps.
A kilometer long.
Almost a kilometer
long. Wow.
Yeah. And then there's another corridor that's almost a kilometer long that's just got tapestries in it. And these tapestries are just awe-inspiring because some of them were made with gold thread. And the detail in the tapestries, like there's this one tapestry I saw of a scene, some religious allegorical scene, and then it's got there's a tapestry in the tapestry, like over a chair, there's a carpet over a chair, but they've done it so it looks like that carpet is 3D.
It looks 3D. It looks like it's coming out of really? The picture.
In a 2D tapestry. It's just... I don't know.
Where do you get people who do these things? I mean,
well, you don't get them today.
Those ones are all dead. But we do get them today. I mean, the artists of today,
really?
one day there'll be artists from now who will be revered in similar ways. But that time, that's what makes the Renaissance so special, is that you had all these geniuses at once. You had Leonardo da Vinci, and you had Raphael, and you had Michelangelo, and you had Dante, and you had all these brilliant people writing, inventing, painting, sculpting, drawing, making, and they all just flowered around the same time. And when you have, and they all knew each other, you know, they were all friends. They'd have dinner parties and stuff. They'd paint each other's portraits into their paintings.
Jeez.
That's just Italy.
It's just amazing, and Northern Italy at that time was the luckiest place on earth in terms of the amount of genius it just produced all in one generation.
It makes me want to do more.
I know. This is the
point,
right?
It makes you feel like such an underachiever in life.
I can't even draw a stick figure standing upright. Now, here we are, people devoting weeks and months of their time for one project. It really makes you want to do more.
Hmm.
Yeah,
and it's just, you know, the constraints. For me, I think that the thing about walking in those corridors and just seeing all that art and it's everywhere. It's not just the paintings and the tapestries and the frescoes. It's also the workmanship of the buildings.
Oh, man.
It's the cornices in the, you know, it's the altars and the way that they are constructed. It's the coverings on the tombs. It's just... And to think that all they had was sunlight and candlelight, like
and rough tools,
and imagination,
like not the kind of tools we've got today.
Oh.
Like they had saws that they had to make themselves. They had chisels and hammers that
charcoal was proper charcoal. They didn't have like HB pencils.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't have 2B HB.
Sharpened charcoal.
Charcoal. You actually burnt their own bloody charcoal to have the like.
Unreal.
It's crazy, huh?
It is. It's absolutely amazing. I would say to anybody who hasn't been there, and it's taken me 40 years to get there, but...
It's worth it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Listen, your whole appreciation for what art can do and how art is an expression of civilization is made evident when you visit a place like that.
And what humans can do.
What humans are
capable of.
Absolutely. All right, when we come back, we'll check out some news. We'll get into some of the stories of the day. We'll update you on what's most important. And we've got How's It China starting today, which is a brand new feature. If you haven't noticed, Pumi is here. It's Tuesday. It isn't Thursday. Pumi's moving to Tuesdays. And we're changing things up a little bit. By the way, I'll tell you more about Skin Sense Day Spa and a special that they've got going on as well for spring. So stick around for that and a whole lot more.
This is CliffCentral.com.